Good morning. Shabbat Shalom. Let's give it another minute and then we'll start. Today we'll be reading the sixth Aliyah of Parasha Vayetze. It starts with Genesis chapter 31, verse 17, and completes with verse 42. There are 26 verses, and we all know that the number 26 is the gematria of Hashem's name. One of the interesting aspects of the number 26 is the periodic table. The 26th element in the periodic table is lead. And one of the interesting aspects of lead is, or really the periodic table, is all of the elements leading up to 26, leading up to lead, they're all trying to combine together to become 26. And all of the elements beyond 26, from 27 up to whatever, they tend to decompose to become lead, to become 26. Essentially, the periodic table is teaching us that we all strive to become closer to Hashem. Starting with verse 17. Vayakam Yaakov vayisa et banav v'et nashav al hagmalim vayinhag et kol mikneinu v'et kol rechusho asher rakas Mikne kinyano asherakash befadan aram lavo el yitak avivarta kanan velavan hala ligoz et zono letigno rachel Et hatrafim asher leaviha, vayignov Yaakov et lev lavan, ha'arami al beli igid lo ki boreahu. Vayivrahu vekol asher lo. Vayakam vayavor et hanahar vayasem et panav kad la lavan bayom hashlishi ki varach Yaakov vayikach et echav imo vayirdo acharav derech shivat yamim vayadbek oto behar hagilad vayavo Elohim el avan ha'arami v'chalom ha'layla v'yomer lo ishamer lecha en tedaber im Yaakov mitov ad ra v'yaseg lavan et Yaakov v'yaakov v'ka et achalo bahar v'lavan taka et echav bahar hagilad v'yomer lavan v'yat liyakov me'asita v'tig nov et levavi v'at naheg et benotai kishvuyot harev lamanacha beta livroach vatignovoti v'lo higata livashalecha v'simcha uv'shirim v'toch uv'kinor v'lo netashtani l'nashek levanai v'libo v'livnotai ata tiskalta aso yesh le'el yedi lasot imachem rav Elohei avichem nemesh amar elai lemor ishamer lecha midaber im Yaakov mito adra v'yata halo halata ki nikso niksafta levet avicha lama ganavta et Elohai v'yan Yaakov v'yomer l'lavan ki yareti ki yamarti.
Has joined.
May me im asher timta et Elohecha lo yihye neged achenu haker lecha ma im adi v'kach la v'lo yada Yaakov ki Rachel genavatam v'yavo lavan v'yohel Yaakov uvohel Leah uvohel shetei ha'amachot v'lo matza v'yetze me'ohel Leah v'yavo b'yohel Rachel v'rachel lacha et הקרפים ותפסימם בחר הגמל ותשב עליכם וימשש לבן את כל האוהל ולא מצא ותאמר אל אביה אל יחר בעיני אדוני, כי לא קל לחום מפניך, כי דרך נשים לי ויחפש, ולא מצא את הטרפים. Vayichar le'Yaakov, vayarev elavan, vayan Yaakov, vayomer le'lavan, ma pishi ma hatati, ki delacha acharai, ki mishachta et kol keili keilai, ma betata mikol kelei veitecha, simko neged achai viachecha, ויוקיחו בין שנינו ועשרים שנה נוכי עם אחרחי לך ואיזך לו שיקלו ואילי ואילי צונך לא אך לך אך Koti Terefa lo Eventi Elecha Anochi Achatena Miyadi Tevak Shena Gnuti Yom Ugnuti Laila Haiti Vayom Akalani Korev Bekera Balaila Watidar Shanati Meinai Zeli Esrim Shana Bevetecha Avaticha Arba Esre Shana Vistevenotecha ושש שנים בצונך, ותחלף את משכורתי, עשרת מונים. לולי אלוהי אבי אלוהי, אברהם ופחד, יצחק היה לי, כי אתה רקם. שילחתני את עני ואת יגיע כפי רעה אלוהים ויוקח אמש. That is the completion of the sixth Aliyah in Hebrew. And now we will indulge our egos and read it in the English. Verse 17. So Jacob rose, and he lifted up his sons and his wives upon the camels. Do you think it's important that we know that he took camels and that he lifted up his sons? Lifting up his sons and his wives represents the elevation, helping and assisting them in their spiritual growth. Verse 18, and he led all his livestock and all his possessions that he had acquired, the purchase of his acquisition, which he had acquired in Padan Aram, to come to Isaac his father to the land of Canaan. Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and meanwhile Rachel stole her father's teraphim. We all know what a teraphim is. It's an idol. But it's an idol that speaks and answers questions. And Jacob concealed from Laban the Aramean by not telling him that he was fleeing. And so he and all that were his fled, and he arose and crossed the river, and he directed his face toward Mount Gilead. Verse 19. Why did it need to say the word face? Because it's a partsuf. It's a structure of 10 sephirot. On the third day, Laban was informed that Jacob had fled. So he took his kinsmen with him, and he pursued him 7 days' journey, and he overtook him at Mount Gilead. And God came to Laban the Aramean in a dream of the night, and he said to him, "Beware, lest you speak with Jacob, either good or evil." And Laban overtook Jacob, and Jacob pitched his tent in the mountain, on the mountain. And Laban pitched with his kinsmen on Mount Gilead. The question is, and I'm not sure where Mount Gilead is, and why it says that Jacob pitched his tent on the mountain. Was there another mountain? And we should know its name because it's near Mount Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done that you concealed from me and led away my daughters like prisoners of war? And why have you fled secretly and concealed from me and not told me? I would have sent you away with joy and with songs and with drum and with harp. And you did not allow me to kiss my sons and daughters. Now you have acted foolishly. I have the power to inflict harm upon you. But the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Beware of speaking with Jacob, either good or bad.' But now you have gone away, for you longed for your father's house. But why have you stolen my gods?" And Jacob replied, and he said to Laban, "Because I was afraid, because I said, 'Lest you steal your daughters from me. The one with whom you find your God shall not live. In the presence of our brothers, recognize for yourself what is with me, and take it for yourself.' For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. So Laban entered Jacob's tent and Leah's tent and the tents of the two handmaids, but he did not find them. And he had come out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's tent. But Rachel had taken the teraphim and placed them into the camel saddle and sat upon them. So Laban felt about the entire tent, but did not find them. And she said to her father, 'Let my lord not be annoyed, for I cannot rise before you, for the way of women is upon me.' So he searched, but did not find the teraphim. And Jacob was annoyed, and he quarreled with Laban, and he said to Laban, 'What is my transgression? What is my sin that you have pursued me? For you have felt about all my things. What have you found of all the utensils of your house? Put it here in the presence of my kinsmen and your kinsmen, and let them decide between the two of us. Already 20 years have I been with you, and your ewes and she-goats have not aborted. Neither have I eaten the rams of your flocks. I have not brought home to you anything torn by other animals. I would suffer its loss from my hand. You would demand it. What was stolen by day and what was stolen at night? I was in the field by day when the heat consumed me and the frost at night, and my sleep wandered from my eyes. This is 20 years that I have spent in your house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters, and 6 years for your animals, and you changed my wages 10 times. Had not the God of my father, the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac, been for me, you would now have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the toil of my hands, and he reproved you last night. That is the end of the sixth Aliyah. There are a number of questions. We see how Rachel is set up to die in a time of judgment, which is what the process of pregnancy and birth is, a time of judgment. And she was set up by the words of Jacob without his even realizing. And how often do we do that?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Her father went in to check her tent, Rachel's tent. She was sitting on the saddle and said that she couldn't rise because of the way of the woman, that month. Wasn't she pregnant for Benjamin? Because she gave birth to Benjamin on the way. So she knew she was pregnant or she wasn't pregnant, and they were on the road for 9 months.
All of that was possible, or it's also possible that she knew her father and she made a choice to be with Jacob and the children of Israel, her children. And so I don't want to say she lied, but, you know, she's told her father what she told him. Obviously, she didn't show as pregnant or he would have known.
Right.
Or maybe he had become so attached to his idols that he couldn't think for himself. And he had to ask questions of the idol to get his answers of how to see the world. Which I think is also an idea that would be true for idol worshippers. They become addicted to their idol. And they therefore have no way to truly perceive what is truth.
Another question. And Rachel died along the way. So Jacob's mother passed away prior to be able to see Jacob again, right? Because he's been gone for 21 years plus, and she died along the way. I know that Jacob's mother's nurse went to Jacob, traveled to where Jacob was, right?
Deborah, yes.
I believe. Okay, so Jacob's mother never saw him again once he left his homeland, right?
That's correct. She sent the nurse, whose name was, I think, Devorah. What's her name?
Devorah,
yes. So she sent Devorah to Jacob, saying it was now time to come home, that Esav had indicated he wasn't going to kill him. So she felt safe to send word to him to come home after the 20-plus years. And Devorah arrived, told him, and according to the Midrash, that she died at the same moment that Rivka died. And Devorah died during in Padam Aram, where she was telling him to come home. And so he didn't know his mother had died.
Okay.
But it was at that moment, because it's all related to tikkun.
Right.
What was Rivka's tikkun was to assist her husband Isaac in his spiritual growth, which means her spiritual growth. And she assists her children also in their spiritual growth. But once she had told Devorah to go, the task has been completed. There's two levels There's the Keter, which is the crown. But the crown relates to kingship and kingdoms. There's Malchut, which has the name of kingdom. One is the beginning, one is the end. Wrong word. One is the beginning and one is the completion. The completion is the manifestation. What's important? Is there a difference between the thought, the beginning, and the completion? All of that is process. But process is empty. We're in the middle of a process. The process was the giving of the Torah. Call that the beginning, if you want, or call Adam the beginning, or you call Noah the beginning. These are different levels of the beginning. But what is the completion? The completion is the Mashiach. The completion is the returning to the endless world. Again, different levels of completion. The question is, what is the purpose of the process? Why does Hashem create the process? What is its purpose? And is there a difference between the beginning and the end? Because if I have the thought, I also have the completion. It's built into the thought. So why do I need to go through the process? It's a question that each person needs to answer for themselves. There will be people in your life who will tell you what's important is the completion. After all, if you decide to be a multimillionaire, using that as a goal, and you don't achieve that, did you fail? It was in the beginning. What was the reason you didn't achieve it? Many different possibilities exist, do they not?
Right.
But there will be people who will tell you that it's absolutely the goal has to be completed. And others will say, I'm still living in my head. I have this image. I have this dream. And I don't even have to work at it because it's all there. I can live in my head. I can live in the dream. What's important? What's the goal? What's the purpose? Man is the first in Hashem's thought. The creation of Adam was in his thought first. But then he goes through 7 days of creation after playing with worlds. Was there a process that God went through? Then he would be, if God goes through a process, then there's no difference between man and God. Because ultimately, man will know all that there is to know, all the wisdom that's available. It's a process that man goes and grows through. But Hashem, when Hashem creates, there's no process. There's cause and effect, and it happens simultaneously. Keter manifested Chokmah, which manifested Bina, all the way down to Malchut. There's no process when it comes to Hashem. So what is important? The process, the beginning, the Keter, or the Malchut? And we know that whatever is in the Malchut becomes the Keter of the next generation, indicating a part of that the process is important. And I know all of these words that I've said to you seem to be confusing. They seem to lack direction. They seem to bring us to these questions with no answers. What is the goal? We all love the completion. We're all proud when we complete a dream. But Kabbalah also teaches that what's important is to love the process. All that pain that's caused from all those mistakes, can you love them? As much as you love the completion of the goal. There's no answer to the question I just asked. Because whenever you have a goal completed, your mind is already on to your next goal. I hope I have confused you well today. But there's a lot in what I've said to ponder. Do you have any other questions, or do you want to continue with this? Try and understand what took place.
We can continue.
Well, normally on Fridays we've been studying Psalms. I'd indicated to you, since we've completed the Advanced Reincarnation class of Sunday, the 3 o'clock Sunday class, we're going to be continuing Psalms during that. So I'd like today to continue the Irgeret Ramban. Which we are with the sixth paragraph. And if you get to the safaria.org website, there's a link on the unique astrological times for the Igeret HaRamban, the letter of the Ramban sent to his son. If he did, it could be something else. But we have this teaching that it's recommended to read this letter once a week, because it helps us make connections and make corrections and learn different traits that are important in our process. So we are starting with paragraph 6, and once you get to the Igeret HaRamban on the Safaria website, you'll notice and to the right of the Hebrew paragraph, there's a little number that's not really bolded, so it's hard to see, but it's really numbering each Hebrew section. And the Hebrew section is followed by the English translation. So we are starting with number 6. Weata b'ni daure ki hamit gaye b'libo al habriot moreid hu b'malchut shamayim ki mitpaye. Ubilbush Malchut Shamayim Shene Emar Hashem Malah Geut lavesh v'gomer. And now, my son, understand and observe that whoever feels that he is greater than others is rebelling against the kingship of heaven, because he is adorning himself with his garments, as it is written, the Lord reigns, he wears clothes of pride. Can we understand this verse from Psalms that we have not yet studied in our psalm? The Lord reigns. Yes, the Lord does reign. He's in control. He's king. He wears clothes of pride. Why is Hashem prideful? Do we really think he is prideful? If he is prideful, then when someone does something goes against what the Torah teaches, he would give the person time, maybe to do teshuvah, maybe to learn from his mistakes. But why would he feel pride? We are taught you are knowledgeable through Torah, not to feel pride in the study of the Torah that you've done, because that's what Hashem made you to be. So what could Hashem want to feel pride about? We can understand that we would feel pride if we had created all that he has created. But within our own lives, what do we have to feel prideful for? We created children, and we've observed them, and we've taught them and watched them grow. And then we feel pride at their accomplishments, because their accomplishments come from us. But in reality, their accomplishments come both because of us and despite us. In what sense is there a purpose to pride? And as this verse is saying, if I think I am better than you, it can only be from pride. It can only be a rebellion against Hashem. Because each of us is created exactly equal. One may be smarter. One may be stronger. One may have more responsibility. One may have a greater desire to receive. But we are all equal in that we were created by the Creator to do a specific task. So how can we be better than another? Because all of the traits that we have received as part of our creation was given to us to achieve that task. Some of us will take one lifetime to complete that task. Most of us will take thousands of lifetimes to complete that task. One is longer, one is shorter in the process. But the goal, the end result, is the same. It's all in the thought. It's all in the completion. The seventh paragraph. Uva me yitkael lev ha'adam im ba'os sher Hashem morishu ma'ashir u'im bekavod halo le'lohim hu sh'ne'emar v'ha'o sher v'ha'kavod milfanecha ve'ech mitpair v'kvod kono ve'im mitpair b'chachma Meisir Safa Velet Ne'emanim Betam Zekenim Yikach Nimsa Hakol Shawel Yifneim Hamakom Ki Viyapo Mashpil Geim Virtsono Magbiha Shefalim lakein hashpil Atzmecha v'nasacha Amakom. What cause does one have for pride? Perhaps his wealth. The Lord impoverishes and enriches. Perhaps his honor. It belongs to Hashem as it is written. Wealth and honor come from you. So how could one adorn himself with God's honor? And one who prides himself in his wisdom surely knows that God takes away the speech of assured men and reasoning from the sages. Thus all are equal before Hashem, since with his anger he lowers the proud, and when he wishes, he raises the low. So humble yourself, and God will raise you up. Does this paragraph need commentary? It's really clear. It's consistent with what was said about the sixth paragraph. But here's the proof of it, all from with words of the Torah, which I lack. Either I haven't read them, or if I have read them, I have forgotten them. And that's the purpose of this letter and many other aspects of the Torah, to remind us constantly. And that's why the Torah is not chronological. That's why the Torah changes subjects, moves from one subject to the next, and then the next, and then the next, and then it's back to the first. And that's the way the human mind needs to learn. It was created to learn that way, in a non-linear fashion. Why does it start with wealth, and then go to honor? These are two traits. One is physical, one is spiritual. Do we honor people because they are wealthy in this world of ours? In this society that we have created? Yes, we do. We honor those who are wealthy. And what do you get when you do this? You get sports heroes who are gods to many. We don't think of them as idols. We don't think of them as another type of God. But if you stand apart and look at them, what do you see? A human being who's been given us certain traits, and they've achieved certain goals, and they've achieved certain tikkunim, and we are all equal. but we don't know that yet. The eighth paragraph. Al kein afarish lecha, eich titnaheg b'midat ha'anava lalechet ba'tamid kol divarecha yihyu b'nachat v'roshcha kafuf ve'enecha yabitu lemata la'aretz v'livcha lemala ve'al tabit bifnei adam v'dabercha imo v'kol adam yihye gadol mimcha ve'enecha im hacham o ashir hu alecha lekabedo ve'im rash hu ve'ata ashir o hacham mimenu hashov ve'livcha ki ata chayav mimenu v'hu zakai mimcha she'im hu chote hu shogeg v'yata mezid. Therefore, I will now explain to you how to always behave humbly. Speak gently at all times, with your head bowed, your eyes looking down to the ground, and your heart focusing on the Hashem. Don't look at the face of the person to whom you are speaking. Consider everyone is greater than yourself. If he is wise or wealthy, you should give him respect. If he is poor and you are wealthier or wiser than he, consider yourself to be more guilty than he, and that he is more worthy than you. Since when he sins, it is inadvertent, while you act knowingly. When you were growing up and you were looking at the ground and you were speaking to your parents or your teachers, they always told you to look at me. And here we're being told not to look at the person we're speaking to. So how do we reconcile these directions? Which is appropriate? Can I look in someone when I speak to them and still be having my head bowed? Can I do that? Can I multitask? The answer is yes. Because the physical world is an illusion. So yes, I can look at them, but be thinking that I'm looking at the ground and raising my consciousness to Hashem. The ninth paragraph. Bekol divarecha umasecha umakshevotecha uvechol et hashov b'liba keilu ata omed livnei hakadosh baruch hu ushkinato alecha. Ki kavodo male haolam udbarecha yihyu beima uvira keved lifnei rabo regard yourself as standing before Hashem with his Shekhinah above you, for his glory fills the whole world. Speak with fear and awe as a servant in the presence of his master. If you see the other person that you are interacting with as the messenger from Hashem, as the angel from Hashem, as an angel is a messenger, if you relate to everyone in your life as Hashem's messenger to you, you will learn to be humble, and you will achieve your tikkun more rapidly. It's not an easy task that I just indicated, but it's always simple, just never easy. The 10th paragraph. Utit bayesh mikol adam v'im yikra'a achayish al ta'aneu bekol ram rach benachat ke'ome lifne rabo. Act with restraint in front of everyone. When someone calls you, don't answer loudly, but calmly, as one who stands before his master. The verse is easily understood, but act like this is not easy. Just simple. Simple to understand what it says. Speak calmly. Don't allow things to bother you. Why do things bother you? The secret to things, why things bother you, the secret to becoming serene, is to realize that you're only bothered by your ego, by your negative impulses, by your evil inclination, which is the ego. It says, I'm important, and this person doesn't recognize that. And so I need to be reactive to that. But you've learned through the tool of binding by striking, you don't have to accept that. You do not have to react. You want to reveal light? That hope that people accuse you falsely, hope that people berate you inappropriately, and give you the opportunity to not speak out, to not defend yourself, to wait silently. And if you look closely, you'll see that light turn on. You'll see the other person either move closer to you or further away. They'll move further away if the light is too bright for their vessel. They'll move closer to you if the light lets them see. We are almost out of time. Are there any questions? You broke up. Did you want to say something?
No, sir.
Okay. Well, have a beautiful Shabbat. I wish you all Shabbat Shalom. Shalom Gadol. There will be a class today at 11 a.m. for the 7th Aliyah and Shir HaShirim. There will be a class Motzi Shabbat for the first opportunity to do a spiritual action in the new week. And we choose to read, to study a section of the Zohar for the Parasha of Vayishlach. And Sunday we will have two classes at 10:30, continuing actually three classes. Sunday morning we have a 7 o'clock class, is similar to what we did today, reading the Aliyah and connecting to different aspects of prayer. The 10:30 class is a continuing our preparation for the holiday of Hanukkah. And our 3 o'clock class will be continuing our study of the Psalms. Shabbat Shalom to all. Have a beautiful, beautiful Shabbat.
Shabbat Shalom. Thank you, Hanok.
Thank you.
Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.
Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.